Chapter 1, The General Theory. I have called this book The General Theory of Employment, Interest, and Money, placing the emphasis on the prefix general. The object of such a title is to contrast the character of my arguments and conclusions with those of the classical theory of the subject, upon which I was brought up and which dominates the economic thought, both practical and theoretical, of the governing and academic classes of this generation, as it has for 100 years past. I shall argue that the postulates of the classical theory are applicable to a special case only and not to the general case, the situation which it assumes being a limiting point of the possible positions of equilibrium. Moreover, the characteristics of the special case assumed by the classical theory happen not to be those of the economic society in which we actually live, with the result that its teaching is misleading and disastrous if we attempt to apply it to the facts of experience. Chapter 2, The Postulates of the Classical Economics. Most treatises on the theory of value and production are primarily concerned with the distribution of a given volume of employed resources between different uses and with the conditions which, assuming the employment of this quantity of resources, determine their relative rewards and the relative values of their products. The question, also, of the volume of the available resources, in the sense of the size of the employable population, the extent of natural wealth and the accumulated capital equipment, has often been treated descriptively. But the pure theory of what determines the actual employment of the available resources has seldom been examined in great detail. To say that it has not been examined at all would, of course, be absurd. For every discussion concerning fluctuations of employment, of which there have been many, has been concerned with it. I mean, not that the topic has been overlooked, but that the fundamental theory underlying it has been deemed so simple and obvious that it has received, at the most, a bare mention. The classical theory of employment, supposedly simple and obvious, has been based, I think, on two fundamental postulates, though practically without discussion, namely: 1. The wage is equal to the marginal product of labor. That is to say, the wage of an employed person is equal to the value which would be lost if employment were to be reduced by one unit, after deducting any other costs which this reduction of output would avoid, subject, however, to the qualification that the equality may be disturbed, in accordance with certain principles, if competition and markets are imperfect. 2. The utility of the wage when a given volume of labor is employed is equal to the marginal disutility of that amount of employment. That is to say, the real wage of an employed person is that which is just sufficient, in the estimation of the employed persons themselves, to induce the volume of labor actually employed to be forthcoming, subject to the qualification that the equality for each individual unit of labor may be disturbed by combination between employable units analogous to the imperfections of competition which qualify the first postulate. Disutility must be here understood to cover every kind of reason which might lead a man, or a body of men, to withhold their labor rather than accept a wage which had to them a utility below a certain minimum. This postulate is compatible with what may be called frictional unemployment. For a realistic interpretation of it legitimately allows for various inexactnesses of adjustment which stand in the way of continuous full employment, for example, unemployment due to a temporary want of balance between the relative quantities of specialized resources as a result of miscalculation or intermittent demand, or to time lags consequent on unforeseen changes, or to the fact that the changeover from one employment to another cannot be effected without a certain delay, so that there will always exist in a non-static society a proportion of resources unemployed between jobs. In addition to frictional unemployment, the postulate is also compatible with voluntary unemployment due to the refusal or inability of a unit of labor, as a result of legislation or social practices or of combination for collective bargaining or of slow response to change or of mere human obstinacy, to accept a reward corresponding to the value of the product attributable to its marginal productivity. But these two categories of frictional unemployment and voluntary unemployment are comprehensive. The classical postulates do not admit of the possibility of the third category, which I shall define below as involuntary unemployment. Subject to these qualifications,